Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening. Welcome to another edition of the New Africa Business Association Black Belt Wall Street Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Bilal Masadiq Bynum, and my co-host,
Abdul Aziz Shaheed. Greeting to our audience, and assalamu alaikum to you, Mr. Bilal.
Okay, and I also want to also introduce our assistant co-host this evening, Sister Ali. Are you with
us? Hey, assalamu alaikum. How are you doing? Yes, this is Sister Ali.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we're going to sit here and we will ad lib, giving our audience a chance to sort of come on, and so they don't miss too much of the show. You know, at the time, it looked like I guess we don't have to give them too much of a chance. Our board is just is lighting up as we speak. So, brothers and sisters, again, it's a continuation of what we've been talking about now for the last 3 weeks, and that is redlining. The conditions of redlining and how it's been controlling and destroying our African-American communities now for over 100 years, and our own federal government started this system of redlining, which is number one, discrimination, but they never ended it. So again, and we know we have monies going all over the place. I was looking at the amount of monies they're sending off again to Ukraine to fight a war, but at the same time, those of us who have made this economy and been making it ever since the beginning of slavery, we just cannot find economical opportunities here in America. So we have a very interesting show tonight. And at this point, I am going to turn it over to Sister Aisha. But before I do, like I said, the trillions of dollars that we are bringing into this country, we can take our trillions of dollars and take to any country. And I find Africa to be the most interesting country that I myself would be interested in taking a portion of the trillions of dollars that the African Americans bring into this country. So with that said, now, Sister Ali, I am going to turn it over to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Brother Bilal. I appreciate that. Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for attending. We are very excited today to continue this conversation about redlining. And so for the past two meetings, the past two shows, we've talked about the difficulty and the challenges historically and the impact that has had on our communities. Tonight, we're going to talk about how solutions can be brought up in the Black community. And they may be unorthodox solutions than what we are usually used to when it comes to entrepreneurship or getting ourselves into situations that we can be successful in. Tonight we have a special guest, and the guest will continue with the conversation by bringing in the focus of international business. This particular guest is, as we say, boots on the ground. He's actually calling in from West Africa tonight to talk about these topics. And so I'm going to go right ahead and talk about who he is and talk about his company as we wait for him to log on. And if he's on the phone right now, he can let me know that he's on. If not, hopefully he'll be able to get on very, very soon. But the guest that we have tonight is a person that I've done business with. I've been partners with him for about 10 years. He's been an entrepreneur longer than that. And he has recently gotten into international business. His company is called SE Capital, And their mission is deeply grounded in Pan-Africanism and the connecting of the African diaspora through business and commerce. Their company provides the necessary services for companies ready to do business overseas but don't have time or resources to do so. They include logistic support, business entity establishment, procuring foreign business government partnerships, contract negotiations, growth plan design and implementation, and contract negotiations. They currently represent companies in the industries of education, cybersecurity, construction, and agriculture with an eye to import-export and other areas of commerce. The founder and owner of this company is named Crasson Artis II. And Mr. Artis is an entrepreneur and an economic development consultant. He's the founder of SE Capital. He works as a broker for Black-owned businesses in the United States seeking to expand overseas. Prior to founding SE Capital, he worked as a consultant on projects that focused on industry research, philanthropic strategy, and developing growth plans for Stage 2 companies. He is also the co-founder and COO of an education tech company called EngageWit. He holds education degrees from NCANT, Aggie Pride, and University of Michigan with an MBA from the Kenan Flagler Business School at the University of North Carolina. This brother is doing amazing things right now in West Africa. Still fresh, still new to the scene. He was part of a trade mission that was sponsored by, and he was personally invited by the ambassador of Sierra Leone to attend this trade mission. So he's there handling some things. But we're so excited that he agreed to be on the radio today to talk about these businesses, to talk about the move that African-Americans can make going into business in Africa. I'm hoping he's on the air right now. Mr. Artis, are you there? Okay, so we're going to wait for him to get on. Those international connections, Brother Bilal, sometimes it would be tricky. But I rest assured that he'll be on soon. He's going to talk more about the type of work that's happening while we're waiting for him to get on the call. Right now is a momentum time in history for Black-owned businesses when it comes to the potential of doing business overseas. I say that because there is a geopolitical benefit for the U.S. government to be heavily invested in Africa. Of course, we know that just recently the African Summit was in Washington, D.C., and the U.S. government brought over many African leaders to talk about the progress that's happening in Africa and then the businesses that they want. They even had a summit in the sense that American-based businesses could pitch their ideas and pitch their businesses to African delegates in hopes of procuring contracts and stuff. And what's not actively known and what's not put out there publicly, but it is happening, is that some agencies are reaching out to Black-owned businesses saying, hey, this is our opportunity to get into the international arena, and it's very important that we do it at this stage because there is funding for U.S.-based businesses from the U.S. government to support this. These types of moves. And what we're talking about as far as funding, we're saying that the U.S. government is giving loans and grants to African countries for the sole purpose of choosing U.S.-based contracts. And to do that, they need U.S.-based businesses to present themselves. And it's important for African Americans to know this is because we understand limitations in this country. Like Brother Bilal was saying, we understand what redlining has done to us. And although this is a country that we built on our backs and our hands and our knees, and we know it better than anyone else, we are still limited in what we can do. And when you look at the international commerce or international business, and you look at it from percentage-wise, United States contributes 5% or attains 5% of the international wealth, only 5. The other 95% is overseas. there's no reason why we cannot of attaining that 95%. There's no reason why we need to feel like we need to be limited to trying to get just the 5% that's here in the United States. And I know that's something that we have struggled with as a people, but I'm hoping that opportunities such as the one that's before us can give us a sense of understanding and hope that we could expand what we're doing and do more. Crafting artist, are you on the phone now? Okay, I'm going to check in with him to see what's going on. Okay. But how do you feel about that, Brother Bilal?
Sister, you know, we've been saying for the longest time, first we talked years ago about African-Americans become invested in each other financially and becoming each other's asset to put businesses in the African-American communities because our communities did not have businesses. And in order to increase the value of our communities, we must turn our communities into business, even though the federal government of this country has been trying to do everything in its power to see to it that we are dependent on businesses rather than doing business. That's why you see the African American as being 95% or more consumers rather than being those that are in the service and trade industry and making monies in their communities. As your mother was, and I know she's feeling ill this evening, unfortunately, Sister Aisha won't be with us, but as she said many of time, and I know these statistics to be true, even though we bring in trillions of dollars of income in our communities, but as far as the dollar bill, it only stays in our community from the time we receive our incomes. It only stay in the black communities for 4 hours. At that point, all of our revenues and monies have gone to another it's gone to the white communities. It went into white banks, and if it goes to the white banks, it's going to the white community or Wall Street, and especially especially the huge amount of money, not only that we put in our consumer spendings, we won't talk about the huge amounts we put into taxation. But again, the huge amount of monies that our church deposits go into the white banks, and the same deposits over $1 trillion a year is and they say this is the conservative, and I'm dealing amount of monies, a conservative amount of monies. $1 trillion would be a conservative figure that is deposited just from our religious institutions, our masjids and churches, because again,
Americans don't have
anything to deposit their money. Okay, well then I'm cutting right off, and of course we're going to our business, and like I said, the opportunity that I think that can change, and I'll say it again before I turn it over, the same $1.7 trillion that we spent in consumer spendings and the monies that we bring into this country, we can take our same monies to any country, and I find Africa to be quite attractive. So with that said, over to you.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Thank you. All right. I was told he's on. So, Mr. Artis, are you on the phone with us?
Yes, I am.
You told me. Oh, hey, how you doing? Okay, great. I was getting concerned about those connectivity issues.
No problem here. I was sitting listening in. I was in kind of a noisy place, but I'm good.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for coming to the show. We are very, very honored to have you. I don't know if you heard me. I read your bio. I talked about your company, and we're just very excited to talk more about opportunities in Africa and actually what's going on right now with where you are and the endeavor that's happening. So first, let me start off by saying that, you know, from my understanding, you know, you were part of the envoy, a trade mission to West Africa to work directly with ministers of various departments and the president to do business in Africa. Tell us more about that endeavor and how you came a part of that.
Yes. So, again, thank you so much. I'm honored to be speaking here with you all today. So I had the privilege of course, Sister Saj connecting me with the ambassador, Waleed Shamsuddin, special trade envoy to Sierra Leone, who's put together this delegation of about 40 people traveling here to Senegal. Originally, we had planned on going to Sierra Leone as well. But it looks like we've kind of changed some of the plans a bit to accommodate some of the travelers. But the whole purpose is, it's partially tourism, of course, but the majority of the purpose is about making business connections. Through the trade envoy, he has given us access to top-level officials, both here in Senegal and Sierra Leone. And through those connections, we're able to find out both what these countries need from us and what our businesses or businesses that we know of, which speaks more to what I do, are able to provide. And because of Europeans and the Chinese and the Russians coming here with an exploitative energy, and of course, just because of our ancestry, they're really looking to connect with Black people in America so that we can be the ones who are satisfying the contracts and providing the products and services and knowledge that they need to move their countries forward. So it's really an exciting time. It's been a wonderful trip so far. Just the combination of business connections included with the kind of tourist activities we've been able to do. We were at Gori Island yesterday to go to see the Door of No Return. We went to the Museum of Black Civilization in Dakar. And just today, we had an excellent business mixer where we were able to meet a former ambassador to the United States from Senegal, the deputy minister of tourism. The other day, we met with the deputy minister of commerce. We also were able to speak with someone from APEX, which is kind of like their national chamber of commerce, but they do even more than that. They help you set up businesses and figure out how you're going to navigate the business world here. So just an excellent trip all around, but that's the crux of it. And I'll just add personally, it's been a bit of a spiritual trip and experience for me. Just one, aligning my life and my work with this kind of endeavor, but then also just to be home, truly home, in a space where, you know, you see everyone looking like you. It was funny. At our business mixer today, there was one non-Black person there, and they just stood out. You know what I mean? It's just to even have that experience, which I haven't really had since going to an HBCU, has been truly life-changing.
Wow, this is phenomenal. Everything that you just said has been resounding. And we want to go more into that. The first question I have with that is, you said that, you know, the ministers are and the representatives of Senegal and other countries, because I do believe in our own professional conversations since you've been gone, you said that you've also met with some diplomats from Gambia and other neighboring countries. Have they communicated effectively as to what type of businesses, industries they're looking for?
Yes. So, yes, and we actually met the Minister of Communications from the Gambia. He's actually a brother who went to school in Silicon Valley. So, well, first of all, there are many things that are needed. And so and the opportunities in Sierra Leone are even more than in Senegal or probably the Gambia. But the key is to know what it is you're trying to provide so that you can talk to the right person. So, for example, today I was talking to a brother who's actually from Atlanta who's come over here, lived here for about 10 years. He started to look into acquiring land and developing real estate. So what he's done is he's acquired a hectare. Well, no, I'm sorry. Hello? Sorry, I thought I was cut off. He's acquired a hectare of land, which is about 2,500 acres. And so he's able to have that relationship with the government that allows him to then parcel out that land and use it for development. And so as I'm representing a construction company, agriculture companies, I'm able to then work through him, who's already established the inroads, to say, all right, let's do some mixed use, let's do some commercials, others within the government that we can kind of finalize those projects. We were also able to connect with the a representative of the Islamic Development Bank and other funding sources as well, because, of course, you know, you need capital to move these projects. But as far as working directly with the government on other areas, whether it's cybersecurity, education, there are we've been able to have conversations with top ministers to know what their needs are. And so then we're able to figure out from there how do we fit what it is we do into what they need and provide that. And sorry if I'm kind of walking after heading back somewhere, I'm walking through an area if there's any background noise. But that's what I've found in the few days here, that the ability to speak with a minister that is in a particular area is just golden, the level of access that you want. You just have to be prepared to, you know, speak specifically about what you want, and then they can start to lay out for you what it is they need.
Awesome. Thank you for that. For those who are just joining in, we are speaking with Crescent Artist II. He is the owner and founder of SE Capital, a business brokerage firm. And right now he's calling us directly from Senegal, West Africa. And we're discussing tonight about the business opportunities that African Americans could have in Africa, as far as the work that is possible. And he's given us a case-by-case and a rundown of that. Mr. Artist, please help the audience to understand. So once a contract or once business has been identified, and then an African-American business owner can say, hey, I can provide this service, what is the expected next step from that point?
Yeah, good question. So I'll walk you through from a conversation I had the other day. So I was speaking with the Deputy Minister of Tourism. So my sister, for example, she's been in the entertainment industry, and she has connections with hip hop artists who are looking to tour and perform and do workshops on music production, but they'd love to do it on the continent. And so talking to the deputy minister, he was able to, first of all, he was excited about the idea in and of itself. But now it's a matter of me being able to lay out to him, okay, so it's going to be these artists. They like to come during these times of the year because, you know, there's a rainy season and a dry season, and that would affect things like, you know, how often we would have outdoor concerts, et cetera. And they'd like to provide this many workshops during this time frame. And then you can start to and then he would connect me with a promoter who would then be able to figure out or explain what kind of revenue you could expect from that kind of schedule. And then, of course, the negotiation begins from there. So, mm-hmm. So that's like the next step with with that opportunity.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for breaking that down. Just recently, the U.S. government had the African Summit held in D.C. And from my understanding, you were not able to attend, but it was something of interest of you. What do you know about the intention right now of the U.S. government doing business with Africa and how African-American businesses can get involved with those resources and connections and opportunities?
I'm sorry, I missed the first part of that question. Ask that again.
Yes, the African Summit that just took place in Washington, D.C., what are you? What part of the purpose and the intention that you are aware of in regards to African U.S.-based citizens, but particularly African Americans being able to take advantage of these opportunities from the governmental standpoint, U.S. government?
Oh yes, yes. So these those kind of opportunities can be found on government websites, like trade missions, et cetera. But there's a level of preparation that needs to be considered. So you'd want to have, clearly defined what it is you want to do, a product or service you want to provide, and then kind of research the participants. So, for example, on the 15th, In D.C., there were 10 or 11 representatives of different countries. There were about five or six different representatives of other agencies like Ex-Im Bank, et cetera. So you want to be able to say, okay, I want to meet with Egypt, and I know that they are in need of potato importation, and I want to talk to Ex-Im Bank member to discuss what financing of that can look like. So you want to go to those kinds of events prepared in that way, and then, of course, be prepared to follow up after those meetings and then have any kind of negotiation and legal support to help you with the follow-through.
Wow. That sounds, for small businesses, especially for Black-owned businesses that may not have any international experience, that sounds like a lot. How does your business, SE Capital, help make that type of process more manageable?
Yeah, so I'm prepared to leverage my network to do just that. So, for example, if you are the potato grower that you're ready to scale up and sell overseas, or maybe you aren't, and maybe you need some expertise to figure out how to scale up, whether it's technical support or even maybe a certain amount of capital. So I can help kind of provide that. But I've also got a network, again, of industry specialists, whether it's you're in construction or cybersecurity or another industry, or other agencies. Like, I don't know if you mentioned Black and Global Business Network. I'm a client of theirs, and so they're at my disposal to help assist, particularly on the legal side. But they're able to walk you through that, or I'm able to walk you through that process, either through me or my network, and bring you to the finish line. And it can be a one-off contract, it could be something that's renewed, or we could really start to look at expanding into different products and services beyond a single contract.
Thank you very much. I'm going to ask one more question, then we're going to open it up to question and answer,
sure,
or just get into really comfortable conversation. So what made you want to come to this type of business, international business, particularly in Africa? What was it about your professional journey that led you here?
Sure. That's a very, very personal thing. So one thing that I've definitely it's been a part of me as a kind of Pan-Africanist perspective. And as I've gone through different areas of business in my professional life, one of the things in looking at what Black communities need is to take advantage of our resources outside of our community and bring them back home. And so one of the things I also noticed is that when you look at so-called American companies, particularly the large ones, they're often registered outside of the United States. They don't pay taxes, if any, and they don't think of America as an entity that needs to be protected and taken care of. They completely make their decisions in their own interests. They are multinational, and that's how they operate and move, whereas we don't think that way, for the most part, rather, as black business owners. And so I'm very passionate about changing that paradigm, taking advantage of those opportunities, and creating a space where we are able to go outside of our home to bring those resources back and build locally while thinking globally. So that's kind of how I came to this space.
Excellent. Once again, audience, we're talking to...
Sorry, hold on a moment. I'm transitioning. Hold on a moment.
Okay. Once again, audience, we're talking to Craft and Artist the Second. He is the owner and founder of SE Capital, a business brokerage firm that connects businesses, Black American businesses, to business opportunities in Africa. And he's on the phone right now having a dialogue with us in regards to international business, what that looks like, in particularly Africa, as we continue this conversation about redlining in our community. And right now, the conversation is solution-based. What are some opportunities how that Black Americans could go outside of the challenges and struggles that we face today in America and expand our businesses and become more successful in what we do? So right now we're going to open up to question and answers for Mr. Artist, for anyone who would like to ask some questions in regard to the topic. The floor is open for that.
Yes, I started out. This is Bilal Bynum, Black Belt Wall Street New Africa Business Association. Sir, you mentioned the Africans' needs. And as Black Belt Wall Street, we've been saying for the longest time, and before I say that, let me just say, here in America, you and I know that the cost of living, and this is for the middle class, you have middle class families, and many of them are school teachers and those that are in that salary range. That was living in a middle class life, but because of this cost of living, many of those middle class professionals are just about homeless. Many of them are getting ready to get put out of their place of living because they don't own their properties. They've been renting the properties, but rent is so high until they won't be able to pay their rent. And there are evictions going on like madness. This is to our middle class, so you can just about see what's happening to the lower income if this is happening to our middle class. So again, like I said, as African Americans, we want our own sovereignty. And if we can't get it here in America, then we're looking for it elsewhere if it's possible. And I know that Africa, and I don't know too much about what goes on in Africa, but I do know when I was on Hajj, I met some very nice folks from Sierra Leone, and they was telling me about the economic conditions that they were going through, and it didn't look very favorable as their condition of living. So I'm saying, with the African-American, there can be a partnership that can go on between where we have the economical development. For instance, and I would like for you to answer this question because I don't know, but if the average a school teacher was to move to any of these countries in Africa and they're making an income of around $50,000, what would be their income if they were to live in Africa? And I'm going to start with that first question right there.
Okay. So, I totally hear your point about just the struggles that people have in America, again, trying to maintain what we would call a middle-class life. Let's start with one piece here is that your American dollars or U.S. dollars go much further here, not just because of the exchange rate, but because of the desire for the dollar. So that would depend. I mean, you've got communities now, growing communities, especially in West African countries, of American expats, Black American expats, who have figured out the same thing that young millennials have figured out, who are now working remotely in the Philippines or other areas in Asia, that you can have a job that's not tied to a place, and fulfill that job as long as you have, you know, internet connection or whatever else you need, and live where you want to. And so if you find yourself in one of those industries and can get paid $50,000 a year, you would live very comfortably here, very comfortably. And because of the growing middle class community here, there are more and more opportunities, more and more residential options here. I'm at a hotel right now, and I can look across and see a condominium building being built. Right, so there are more and more residential areas with the kinds of amenities that you would be used to popping up here as well.
Okay, so that money increasement is very important. My next thing, I have a couple questions, and I'm gonna go through mine. No others on the phone are dying to get into their questions. But again, when it comes to now buying and owning land, and I'm gonna go through a series of my questions, and you can take them and answer as you please. And one of them is buying land. The other one is building and owning homes. And the other one is buying and owning our own businesses. So those are the three questions that you need me to repeat. Buying land, building our own homes, and having our own business. What's your comments on that?
Sure. So all three of those are specifics that we've been made aware of during this trip. So let me start with buying land. Now, land ownership here works a little differently. It's not like, you know, what we think of in the United States. And it's funny because we've also had conversations about the fact that you quote unquote buy land in the United States, but if you don't pay taxes on it, then they take it back. So you can say land ownership is tricky in the United States as well. But here you've got cities or municipalities that control land, but then you out in the countryside, you've got land that is still managed by a chief. He is considered the steward of the land, and he allows people to use the land if they're going to use it productively. And it's still considered communal, but yet you can still use the land that's gifted to you. Now, the interesting thing is that if you are able to go through your DNA and discover a linkage to a certain country, you are able then to claim land because you are considered a descendant of its citizens. And so, for example, I plan on, as soon as I get back doing my checking my ancestry to see if there's a Senegal connection. And if there is, I can then go find the land of the area of my people, and that chief would conceivably grant me land. Now, I would need to explain to him how I'm going to use it and what I'm going to use it for, but he would grant me that land, and I would receive what we would consider a deed in the United States, but it's more of, think of it more like permission to use, okay? So if I built, you know, a home, or I built a commercial building with a business, whatever that whatever it is I choose to do that, as long as I'm a good steward of the land, mm-hmm. I'm able to maintain that. And then, of course, maintain the profits of whatever I build on it. Now, obviously, in that case, you'd want to then kind of help out or provide some kind of share profit sharing with that village or area, but it would be your land to use. So that's one piece. You can go into a more industrialized area or a city and purchase land from an owner, but it kind of works very similarly. So acquiring land is a matter of finding an area that you want to find land or buy land, or finding, like I said, that tribal village connection wherein you can acquire the land through that traditional route. And then, like I said, you'll be able to move forward with your plans. Now, if you want to build a home, it again works similarly as it does in the United States in the cities here, but you can also do that out in the countryside, in the village, with land that's been deeded to you or bequeathed to you because of your ancestral connection. I know. I'm sorry, say again.
No, go right ahead. We're listening to you.
Yep, I know specifically of a group of Black expats that are connected with a developer in Ghana, and they bought a lot of land or acquired a lot of land near the coast, and they are allowing people to build, and I believe they were going for about 20,000, maybe 25,000 at the most, but these were 2,500 square foot homes that they were that they're building. It's an interesting structure because it's completely circular. So you need to look at the floor plan of it to know if that suits your needs or not. But at any rate, the point is there are opportunities much cheaper than you would find in the United States, quality construction, plenty of space. And like I said, because in general your money goes further here, so
mm-hmm.
so that's so as far as home acquiring land and building homes, that's those are the opportunities there. Now establishing a business, I'll tell you, I'm actually literally going to go through that process in the next 2 days in two countries. I'll be establishing a business entity here in Senegal and one in Sierra Leone. Now, our trip itinerary was altered so that we won't be traveling to Sierra Leone. We've got the ministers and officials that we were going to meet with coming here to Dakar, but I will be remotely through the special trade envoy, Ambassador Waleed Shamsuddin. He's going to be helping me register a business in Sierra Leone over the next couple of days. It's about a 48-hour process. Well, when you know someone, I'll put it that way. So going through the ambassador, it's a 48-hour process. Mm-hmm. And I'll also, like I said, be going through that process here in Senegal. And in Senegal, they have Asian Apex, which, like I said, operates kind of like what we know of as a chamber of commerce, but they have an entire office that helps you set up your business, helps you understand what the needs are of the country. Like today, we had a presentation by an APEX representative who was laying out all the different sectors. He was talking about agriculture, specific crops that are needed, not just specific crops, but even down to the kinds of food processing they need. So he's talking about how many onions and tomatoes get wasted every year because their farmers can't sell them fast enough, and they don't have processing facilities here to process them and sell them in country or export them. And so mm-hmm. if you're looking to start a business to just process onions, right, that mm-hmm. could be something where you could get a loan to build a facility, have a facility built, and get that off the ground very easily and immediately have customers or revenue and cash flow. And even the process for financing, if you're working in an industry that the government deems as a need, there are a lot of financing opportunities for you there. So to just establish a business entity in the country, that can operate in different industries. It's about a two-day process. If you're going to do something specific like mining or some kinds of construction, you will need a particular business license, and that will cost you more, but it's also relatively inexpensive. And I'll give you the numbers really quickly, and then we can move to another question. But in Sierra Leone, we're talking, I believe, $400 US, and that will get you that's the attorney's fee and the fee to the government. And but again, that's Sierra Leone, which is not as developed as Senegal. Here in Senegal, their process is a little different, a little weird to me, but it's different. It's going to cost you $2,000, but what happens is $600 of it is the actual fee that goes to the lawyer and to, you know, the country, and you will they will give you a check back for the $1,400, and then that $1,400. Is to be deposited into your bank account, your local bank account that you create here. And they do that because they want to make sure that your business has enough capital to start out. So you at least need to have that much skin in the game. But that's how it works that's the process, or that's what it looks like to create a business in both countries. Again, it doesn't take very long when you know the right people, and they are, again, eager to do business with you. And, again, I know Sister Sasha is going to provide contact information for me. I am a broker for businesses, so I partner with businesses that want to kind of leave everything up to me or don't want to get into the weeds of a lot of the process. But if there is specific information that you want from me and can go ahead and do on your own, I'm more than willing to give you that information and extend my connection so you can kind of move on your own.
And I'm glad that you said that, Mr. Artist, because that was the contact information I'm definitely going to give at the end so everyone can have an opportunity for that. But another, and I would just say that by you saying that, it helps us move the mission further, right? Because this international business on this scale, it can be very foreign to us on a collective level. We are not told as a community of people very often that we can get into this area of business. It's always been something that we've either seen advertised on TV or in movies and such, but we're never represented in that, at least not in the legal way, right? Propaganda on media and stuff. So for us now to have these conversations, and for those who don't know the ins and outs or maybe nervous, knowing that we have a company such as yours, such as SC Capital, say, hey, I'll do the heavy lifting. I'll be able to help and negotiate and build that bridge. Is a great stepping stone. So thank you for mentioning that.
And brothers and sisters and brothers, at this time, I have opened up the mic for all of our listeners. So if you hear me, at this point, we're hearing you, but I will ask you, until you're ready to speak, and I can hear our background noise already, and so I'm saying I don't want to unmute you. I want everybody to be able to participate, but I must insist that you put yourself on mute until you are ready to speak. Other than that, I'm opening the mics up so we can all interject and speak to each other and talk to our guests about a topic that I would say is historical. So at this point, I am opening the mics, but please, if you're not ready to speak, keep yourself on mute. Thank you so much. Our mics are open.
Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum
salam. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes, very well.
Yes, brother.
Okay. My question is this.
Let me stop you right there. Listen, please. Brothers and sisters, I don't want to have to mute everyone. So the noise hearing in the background, please, discontinue, put yourself on mute, because I would have to put everybody on mute and everybody wouldn't get a chance to participate. So put yourself on mute, please. Thank you. Go right ahead, brother. Sorry.
Okay. I'm second to the brothers. Thank you for your expertise and your hard work. I know it ain't easy, brother, okay? My question is this. There's a difference in the economics of Senegal or wherever you at to America. Now, a lot of the things you're talking about will not, may not be a collective group of people of, you know, doing business. I'm talking about that. Let's say we set up a factory here, or there's opportunity to set up a factory here in a factory town that's just closed down now. Would it be economically, what type of business would be economically feasible for the exchange of money for us to supply them with the product or services that they needed? I know it's a big question, but I'm trying to just narrow it down to, like, may say agriculture, maybe something we're growing here, or something that we could manufacture here that they need, and the exchange of money, would it be, because our cost of living is higher. We make, you know, we need, you know, we're a little bit different in what they live on over there, and how would that work out?
Okay, so let's take agriculture as an example. So there are specific, there are a few crops or commodities off the top of my head that I know have been mentioned lately. Rice, one of them. Fish actually is another one. Those would be products that are eaten very often here, and would be they would actually be looking to import those from others other than the Chinese or some of the people they've been dealing with. And even if you were to, you know, buy some land here and build, you know, aquaculture type of setup, that would be very lucrative. In fact, I was talking to a sister about that today, looking into that. But honestly, even beyond those specific products that are really needed, they eat what most people eat in the world. And so if you're talking about agriculture, you're talking about something that you grow, it's really just about finding the right purchaser, finding a purchaser, because they also have large food packaging companies here already. And so it'll just be a matter of getting in the door with those companies. And again, you would have the benefit of a country and a government that is looking to do work with you as opposed to those of other countries and nationalities. You want to go, you know, beyond agriculture, take cybersecurity. There's a cybersecurity company that I represent. That's a need both on the private side and the government side. And so then it would just be a matter of making those right connections with the government, say their minister of commerce, and getting connected to the right government agencies that need those services, and then kind of going from there. So honestly, it's a matter of taking what you do or want to do and then finding the right people. There are trade missions on specific industries, of course, and there are lists of industries that are needed. And, you know, particularly after this trip, I will have access to people that can kind of feed me those lists regularly. And it's not necessarily information you can't find online, but again, if you have the connections that this delegation has afforded us, again, through the trade envoy, then, again, you can kind of get that updated list, so to speak. But you can, accessing that list, if say, you're in a position where, because some people think, I don't necessarily want to jump out there and say, I just do this one thing. I'd actually like to know what the opportunities are and then figure out where I want, what gaps I want mm-hmm. to fill in. And if that's how you want to operate, there's definitely some research that can be done as to what opportunities are there, and then you go fill them. I'm operating right now particularly more on the basis of I represent people in about 3 or 4 industries, and that's what I'm kind of focusing on. But, of course, through the access of the delegation, I'm finding about all kinds of opportunities.
Inside source is much better than the government website. I understand. Yeah. Thank you
right,
very much.
Exactly.
I appreciate you. I appreciate you.
No problem.
Again, I appreciate your work. I appreciate your work.
Yes.
Thank you for that. We were, and also, Mr. Artist, you, the other part of that question that I don't think you heard or got to was the payment scale. So if someone were to, let's say, for instance, rice, you said rice is something that's needed. Let's say there's a farmer in South Carolina who could export from South Carolina into Senegal products of rice. What would the payment look like? Would they pay them in U.S. dollars? How would that work out?
Good question. So, and this is where you establishing a company in the country helps. One, because they would, particularly the government, but they'd like to work with a local entity. So once I establish my company here, I will have a local entity. They also like to, if you are an external company, a company external to this country, it's better if you partner with someone locally. So if you're not going to work through a local entity, you should partner with a local entity. And, you know, that can have its advantages, of course, because you are able, that local company that you partner with is able to help you navigate through some of the processes, right? And they're on the ground here to help. But at the same time, then that also means you are taking on a partner, so that you have to navigate working with them. And there can be some cultural barriers. In addition to, you know, you have a partner now, you have someone else cutting in on your revenue. But the pay, for example, for me, I'll just use my business model, for example. So let's say Sister Saja has an education company, and SE Capital helps broker a contract with the Minister of Education's office. So the Minister of Education's office is going to have an official contract with SE Capital. SE Capital is then going to subcontract to Saja's company. And so SE Capital will take a percentage of that contract, and then Saja will get paid. Now, she'll get paid what she said she needs to get paid. Now, if she says, I can deliver the work for this much, then that's what she'll get paid, and my portion will come in addition to that. But that's how she would get paid, and it would flow from, and again, this is the way I have it set up. It would flow from my company here in Dakar, transferring it to U.S. dollars to my company in the U.S., and then I would pay to Sasaja in U.S. dollars. Otherwise, you would, like I said, need to set up an entity here on your own and create your own bank account, and you would get paid in the local currency and then have to exchange it and convert it. Or you work through a local partner, and then you and that local partner somehow work out how you're going to get paid the currency, how that's going to be exchanged. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thank you so much.
Brothers and sisters, mm-hmm. Our mics are open. We welcome your questions.
Yes, this is Brother Aziz, and I thank you very much, Brother Artist, for all the information you're sharing with us. This is something that normally you'd have to buy somewhere, and so we're thankful that you're sharing this information with us. My question to you is two-part. One of them is going over there, having certain amounts of money on you, or how when you go over there and as an individual looking to, I'm just a plain person going to look to buy some land or something, or how would you deal with, how would you handle your money's going over there? And also is a major problem for Americans traveling anywhere is, what is our safety over there as the individuals or as a group of people when you travel to Senegal or Sierra Leone based on the crime they may have there or may not have?
Good questions. So one, and this is Senegal, the crime rate here is very low. I've always felt very comfortable here since I've been here, but then I found out statistically that the crime rate is very low. So that's been very that's made me much more comfortable in thinking about returning and really creating this as a hub for me. So there's that piece. Now, as far as the money, so for me, I knew I was going to be creating some business entities and needed a certain amount of cash. So I brought a certain amount of cash, and I believe you can carry up to $10,000 without declaring it on a flight, I believe. You need to double check that. But like I said, I brought a few thousand just to because I knew I was going to be spending that cash to create these business entities. And so I was carrying that. But otherwise, you do want to carry a certain amount of cash because it's sometimes hard to find ATMs. And you also want to be able to exchange your currency for the best rate. So, you know, they've got stores in the mall. They've got the ATM, they've got the which is going to charge you an exchange fee, and then they've got the airport. But you also have private money exchangers, which again we've been privy to because of this delegation, that have given us the best rate. So you want to kind of think about how much cash you want to carry over here and then get exchanged, how much cash you think you'll need moving around, and think about which places you might go where you can use your card. So like here in the hotel, you can use your cards for meals and other things. But if you're going to go out, particularly in the market, you're going to need cash and you're going to need it in the local currency. Now, people in the market do take dollars, U.S. dollars, but the thing is they're going to gouge you on the price if you do that. And I found that out the hard way. But it's just bargaining. It's what business is. It's no different than America. That's one thing I want to stress. The customs and processes of things may be different here, and I can give a few examples, but it's the same principle. I'll give you an example. People talk a lot about corruption in certain countries. So here, if you like, when I go to get my business license established, I'm going to need to pay the person that processes it. This is in addition to the fee that you pay the country. I just need to pay them, but it's like a tip, right? So they're just, you know, that's just a part of the cost of doing business. And people may say, oh, well, that's corruption. But if you think about it, in the United States, if you're a developer and you want to get a piece of land rezoned, you got to go give some money to somebody's campaign on the city council so they'll vote for that, right? That's the price of doing business. So, it's the same principle. It's just business. But it's just a little different in the way the process happens. So then just like in America, you would over here, you would account for that as a part of the cost of doing business. And you would budget for it, and then you proceed from there. So so on a personal level, you just kind of have an idea of what you can spend with a card and then what you can what you'll need cash for. Again, like I said, shopping in markets, you'll need cash. A few of the traveling, you know, taxi, et cetera, you'll need cash. But if you're going to go to a regular establishment, you know you can use your card. And again, I'm speaking just to Senegal. The crime rate is low here, and I've always felt very comfortable. So you could probably feel a little more comfortable or not worry as much about carrying around more cash here.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. You definitely answered my question there.
Our mics are open, brothers and sisters. We welcome your comments.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Yes, this is Sister Joyce. calling in from Oklahoma City, and I'd like to say good evening to everyone. But I would like to know, in terms of relationships, because once we make that transition and we may be already coming from a damaged background, so to speak. Now, how are we received when we're thinking about making this transition? Because even though those who are making decisions may say, yeah, you're more than welcome, you know, come and establish yourselves. But now, how are the locals receiving new people coming into their quote-unquote territory?
Good question, good question. So, first of all, you know, we know there's a lot of propaganda that's been put out there about, you know, African people shouldn't deal with African Americans and vice versa. The vibe that I've gotten here is very hospitable, and not just from a, ooh, you're an American, so I think you have some money, but just genuine hospitality. You can see it between the people here, each other. So it has been, in my experience, in the days I've been here, very easy to create relationships, and the how would I put this? So here's an example. Today we were given a presentation about a an area. So if you think about the cars on the coast, there's an airport about an hour and a half away, and kind of in between the two is this area. And I don't want to butcher the name. Jamyaju. So Jamyaju is this area where you've got the offices for the, you know, ministers of commerce, ministers of tourism, et cetera, what we would consider government buildings. The large soccer stadium is near there, and they have this area set aside just for development, light industry, et cetera. They're looking to build out that area so that it becomes a destination, right? Dakar is becoming full and overpopulated, particularly during the dry season when people come into the city for more jobs, because agriculture out in the countryside is not as prevalent as during the wet season or rainy season. And so they're looking to build up these other areas, and they're looking for foreigners, but not necessarily foreigners from these other countries that have come in to exploit. So they know that we are coming in, usually, in general, looking to connect, right, connect culturally. And so we are received differently. I believe we're received differently because of that. And so I would say there's definitely an energy and an air of welcoming us, right? So it's not just, something that somebody put on a brochure or a promotional video. I've literally felt it every moment that I've been here. So I can definitely speak to that. And I think what you put into it, right? You meet people, you have conversations, you ask questions, you get to know people, everything you would do to build strong relationships normally. And you do that here, and you should be successful.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Our mics are open. We welcome your questions.
Yes, Brother Artis, this is Brother Aziz again. I would like to know, is transportation difficult around there? If I want to go to the countryside, it's 20 miles away from Dakar, something like that, or 40 miles. Is it hard to get some transportation to and from there, and do I have to worry about that?
Good question. So they actually just completed, I can't remember, at least 5 years ago, a major highway system from Dakar out to the airport. So the major airport used to be in the heart of Dakar, and so they built a larger one that, like I said, about a couple of hours or hour and a half away. But again, they built a new system. So this highway is not, you know, half dirt road, half steam. Like, this is a regular highway, like you would, you know, reliable highway that you would know of in the United States. They also have a rail system, that they're working on. That's not completed yet, but they're working on so you can travel in between, I believe, in 22 minutes. So, you know, I was told that traffic would be bad, but honestly, we only hit traffic once we got well into the city of Dakar, and that isn't even every time that we've driven around. So if you're talking about city out to the countryside, yes, you can get out of Dakar, but depending on where you're going, you're not necessarily going to have a strong road system. So think of it more like you can get from Dakar to other major cities near Dakar and back. Out to the countryside would be a different story. And then of course during the rainy season, then those roads would be even worse. But one thing that the Deputy Minister of Tourism told us today is that there's plenty of development by the coasts, right? And so what they're looking for is opportunities out more near the nature preserves, out more in the countryside. And so it looks like in the next 5-10 years, they will definitely be building up more options as far as both residences and places to visit, i.e. a hotel or even Airbnb, probably some of those types of places where you can rent out a tiny home, for an extended stay. Those kinds of opportunities will most likely be coming soon.
All right. Again, this is Bilal Bynum again. And we're here to 9 o'clock. So as we go along, anybody who have questions, hopefully we'll ask them. But I do have one or two more questions that I like to ask. And that is when it comes to community growth, as African Americans, when we came here as slaves, the United States didn't have anything but the black soil. Nothing was nowhere but this black soil. They bought all of our, most of the large amount of slaves that came into this country came into where it came into this country, and they worked the black soil. That black soil extends all the way from Texas to Virginia to include Delaware and to include Delaware and Maryland. This is where slavery and the produce and all the produce that slavery presented to this country, this is where it all started, from the soil to production. That production made America the richest country in the world. And today, America is still the richest country in the world, and it has much to do with the African-American production that made them rich and the African-Americans' production that keeps them rich. Now, if, like I said, that same production that we did here in America, we can take that production if we want to, of course. We can take that same production anywhere in the world, but in this case, we're talking about Africa. Africa, because we are African Americans, and we would, that's our home also. That's the way we feel about it. So again, I am saying, if African Americans decided, and if the New Africa Business Association put together a delegation, and let's say a delegation and no more than a couple hundred, but each one of us pledged that we would be coming to Africa for a business a conference, let's say next year, and each one of us is going to be bringing at least $3,000 in pledges with us. So again, as an introduction, that $10,000 that maybe one or two of us, 200 of us, are pledging to go to Africa and start a black African-American development, we're saying now we would like to start businesses that we think would make money almost immediately as soon as we're in business. One of those businesses, tourism. And we know that nowhere that I can think of, we can go where we can stay into 4- and 5-star hotels, and it's owned by black people's peers, but in this case, African-Americans. And not only the hotel resorts that we would be bringing our monies down there, showing good faith that we have this type of monies. And in this case, like I said, 200 of us bringing at least $10,000 apiece. And of course, when that money is exchanged in Africa, where we were talking about development, that money now exchanged to the point of what their money is worth. So again, my question, to build this hotel or the resort, are we talking about the cost that exists in Africa? Are we talking about a different cost? And not only the cost that exists in Africa, but is this something that African Americans can realize? My question, that artist.
Yes, I completely agree with you. You know, there wouldn't be a United States without the work of enslaved black people. It just wouldn't have been viable. And like you said, we continue to hold it up economically. I think that'll be an amazing trip and event to pull off, a delegation, particularly that large. And just sitting here thinking, I'd love to be a part of helping to support that. So now, when you ask that question again.
And now once we put together our delegation and we got our commitments, is it possible that we can buy 10,000 acres of land? And I like to emphasize that, Brother Artis, we don't necessarily have to be in the developing cities. We need the land. If we can start off here in America with just land and build New York City, build Washington, D.C., build Chicago. You see where I'm going with this? African-Americans built this country. So if we built this country for someone else, think of what we can do if we had the opportunity to do it for ourselves, especially where our monies as Americans would be much greater in the country that we love and also in the country that needs developing. We can do it. Can there be a partnership between African Americans and Africa as to where Africans can come home and be at home? And yes, build Africa and the infrastructure of Africa. And that infrastructure don't have to be in the major cities. We have the talent. Of course, like I said, I don't have to repeat myself. Look what we did here in America. We can do it anywhere. We would love to do it in Africa. Is it possible?
Yes, it is. And so I'll give a couple examples. So one, if you've heard of Akon City, the singer Akon, he and his father have been bequeathed land from the Senegalese government, and he plans to build a city. So now if you go to the website, it's got some very futuristic pictures on it. And so I don't know what it's going to end up looking like, but Again, Ambassador Shamsuddin, Special Envoy, has got connected us with Akon's father, and they are having a event tomorrow. Because when I get a phone, I'm going straight to sleep because we got an all day trip. We got to arrive out to Akon City or the site, and they're unveiling an opening of a rec center, and so they got a whole day of activities planned. Akon, you know, going to have some musicians, and then they're going to show sporting events. It's going to be a whole thing, but they've got this chunk of land that they're looking to develop. Like I said, there's another brother I met today. He used to live in Atlanta and now lives here. He is he has already procured about 2,500 acres from the, from the government to do development. And so there are definitely ways, and again, easier outside of the larger cities, but if even if you did it along that large highway system, it would be easily accessible for you to acquire that land and put us to work. Like, that's what I'll be doing, right? I'll be pitching, I'm putting together a proposal for a mixed-use development, commercial and residential, with a clinic and a school and a renewable energy run microgrid to develop, hopefully either at Akon City or at the land that this other brother has, or the land near the soccer stadium, any of those sites, whichever one works best. But that's the kind of planning it takes. And I'm sitting here, you know, connecting with an urban planner that came on the delegation, and then I got contractors and developers that I have at home, like my uncle's company. He's a developer. He does infrastructure. I got another developer in Raleigh, North Carolina, where I am, Black Brother, who does commercial and residential. And then I've got Black-owned renewable companies in the United States. We have all the talent we need. We have all of it. I see Black people in America as being, as a group of Black people on this planet, the probably the most educated. We have access to resources, and we have access to capital. It's just underutilized. And I think that's what you were getting at. That capital is underutilized. So if we pool it together and find the right opportunities, I think magic can happen. So yes, that is very possible. It would take some planning and some strategy around where you want to acquire that land. Again, like I said, I would suggest near this highway system, this established highway system, and not too far from Dakar. But yes, it is definitely possible. Even if you were to set up a delegation that would come, say, a year from now in December, let's say, I would think that would be enough time to kind of scope out the site so that delegation can come here, have a lot of the cultural experiences and be grounded in Senegal, be able to go out and visit that site, and then start to finalize acquiring whatever land hasn't been acquired by that time. So, yes, that's very possible. And, in fact, a family that owns a farm in North Carolina, I was on the phone with them before I came here, and they're looking to acquire about 100 acres. And so I'll be asking the someone from the office of the Minister of Agriculture and Land Use what that'll look like and how I can go about that. But yes, very possible, very possible.
Brother Artist,
and let me add
one more piece. Let me add one more piece, and that's just in Senegal. Sierra Leone has even more opportunities than Senegal.
Excellent.
Yes, and so let me just add that. Thank you so much, Brother Artist, for saying that. And that's why we're doing what we're doing tonight, because we're talking about actualization, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking about what you just said, Brother Bilal, as far as us, we've built this country and generation after generation. Can that opportunity, can that same act, the same works happen in Africa? And we're saying right now, yes, it can, and it is happening. That's why these trade missions are taking place. That's why these companies are coming together, partnering with delegates and heads of state and saying, we have the source, we have the resources, we have the capital, and we have the skill to do what is needed in Africa. And then the African nations are inviting us because they do know what we've been through, and they do know of our skills. So people like Crescent Artist II, who has business to where he's like, I'm going to be that bridge, is what you're talking about, Brother Bilal, as far as we're actualizing it now. It's happening now.
Excellent. As you know, that, and at this time, I like to present, because I know I'm looking at my switchboard and it's filled up, but I know many of those that are on the switchboard because they've been with us before. There is so much talent listening to us as we speak. I am going to bring in our director from Texas. Director Stone, are you with us? Director Stone out of Texas, are you with us?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry. I had my phone muted. Good evening, everyone. I'm traveling.
Good evening and happy birthday.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I really do appreciate that. I did get on a few minutes late. And thank you guys so much for the birthday wishes. I've enjoyed what I've heard so far. And my question to the brother, do y'all have any good shopping centers out there?
Good question, good question. And let me also say happy birthday.
Thank you.
Yes.
I'm teasing about the shopping centers. My, I like to crack jokes, but dual citizenship. How complicated is it? And you may have covered this. I don't know, a few minutes late because I had a celebration service today with some of our crew, and got in my car late. But it is very complicated, complex getting citizenship.
No, that's a good question. And I know part of the answer. So, like I said, if you are able to trace your family lineage and your DNA back to a group that originated from this country, then you are not only able to gain citizenship, but you're able to then find that group and speak with that chief, and you would be bequeathed with some sort of gifts, and most likely land. If you are not able to do that, gaining dual citizenship otherwise, I'm not sure about, but I'll be finding out soon, because once I do my DNA, if I'm not from here, which I just feel like I am, if my people are not from here, I'll be looking into it, because I feel like Senegal would be a great hub for me to do my work, and having citizenship would just make things a lot easier. So while I know one way for sure to get it, otherwise I'll have to do a bit more research into that. But it's definitely something that is encouraged by the government. So definitely know that.
And Brother Otis, with that said, let me, because there are many African Americans, and I am one of them, who have done the DNA. And from that DNA, I can tell you, mine's read that I was 45% Nigerian, 25% Cameroon, and there was another 15% of another country that is hard for me to pronounce, and only 4%.
Ghana and the Ivory Coast.
I was just getting ready to bring you in behind me. So again, thanks. But again, yes, that's my sister who just spoke up. Of course, we've had our DNA done. So with that that said, and sis, I'll let you say that again. But we've had the DNA done, and of course, I am saying that those of us who have had the DNA done, you know what part of Africa you're from. But when we come over there, we don't know if we need to come over there from our own different tribes or our own different cities or whatever, or we can come there as African Americans to make our investment in Africa, and we can make it collectively. So again, with that said, and I miss Juan. Brother Artis, we have many state directors on with you tonight. New Africa Business Association, and we want to team with you. But New Africa Business Association has a pretty long arm now as far as participation in many different states. So the state of Delaware, the director, Swan, I'm gonna let you make a few comments.
All right. Good evening. And thank you so much, Mr. Artis. There is a plethora of information that you have presented, so I'm looking forward to getting your contact information so that I can get even further details on the many things you explained to us. And first, since my brother has already mentioned our DNA from the paternal aspect of the Bynum family, we are 40% Nigerian, probably Igbo tribe. And also, we are of the Cameroon, Baluba, Congo, and the Bantu people of Kenya with 22%. In Ghana, we're 13% of the House of Israel and the Ivory Coast, 7% Benin in Nigeria and Togo. Of course, they're on the Gulf of Guinea, and 3% Mali with the Zakor people. And, of course, we're connecting now with not only our African paternal ancestry, but also with our Jew, as we prefer calling it, our Hebrew ancestry, because people, most of us, are not aware that when we were brought into the diaspora, many of your black Jews, as we call ourselves Hebrews and Hebrew Israelites, were very numerous in that transport. We are 8% of some type of English, Norway, Norwegian, and Irish ancestry. So, yes, we're 93% total. So far with our DNA paternal being studied, with 85% African, 13% European, bringing us to a 98% total. Probably I'm thinking that 2% might have something to do with the Native Americans in America because, as you know, they were very prominent in helping us, especially doing some of our escape routes, because they knew the lands that the whites did not know. We're very appreciative of our Native Americans. The things that I'm interested in, because you mentioned so many things, was that U.S. government funding with the loans and grants, I know we can't talk about that now, but looking forward to your continuing to be with us to share these things. But the U.S. government funding was something that caught my attention. Cybersecurity also caught my attention because we have in our family some young people who already are certified in cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. So I'll be explaining to them tonight, since they weren't with us, that you are also connected with that. And, of course, you know, so that is a very big issue that's going to be ongoing culturally. And the other thing was, my question is on twofold. One, water. You know, water is our chief resource. What can we do for our people in terms of where water is needed, especially purification? I would want to go something as simple as helping people have water. If they have water, they have life. And I know we didn't talk about that tonight, but I'd like to go into that resourcing and purification process. Another question I have is on women and opportunities, because women, the businesses among women, I mean, it's burgeoning with women going into business and entrepreneurship, and how is that growing in our African lands? Also, I was interested in education because I am a retired teacher, and I want to see how education is being tapped in terms of how we can help in that whole sphere, because without education, you don't have any kind of a civilization anyway, but the right kinds of education, of course. And then I was very pleased with how you explained the dual citizenship, because since my family, Bilal and myself and Joyce, she was on tonight, we already know our connection through the tribal thing, so getting with the chiefs and letting them know this DNA that has already been done on our part can help us to make that connection with the lands. Thank you for sharing that with me. But I'm just looking forward to continuing to correspond with you and finding out more and more and more. Thank you so much for giving us so much expertise.
No problem, no problem. Those are really good topics to bring up. And let me add, I had a really good conversation yesterday with a brother that's on the delegation, and he went through both African ancestry, which of course has the largest collection of DNA information on African ethnic groups. And then he also went through 23andMe, which gives you your, I'm going to say it wrong, haploid group, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and he actually was able to correlate both of them to give his ancestry, but that's very key. The piece about water, I don't know as much about, but that mm-hmm. is a very important component and will become more important, especially in a country like Senegal, which has this northern half that's very dry. And then as far as women are concerned, I think there, or what I have noticed is that there seems to be a renaissance in women, even in particularly in a Muslim-dominated country like Senegal. Even at the museum, there was an entire exhibit dedicated to Black women across the continent of Africa in leadership, and so. So those are definitely some bright spots and some sources of hope and inspiration. So I definitely plan on, you know, continuing to having conversations with you all. I will always continue to have conversations with Black people who are looking to uplift other Black people, particularly as it relates to business and particularly as it relates to strengthening our cultural ties. And so connecting with our African countries is one of the best ways to do that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Let me just say, sister Sasha Ali is our ambassador. Black Belt Wall Street and her and your mother are the ones we recognize as our ambassador. And of course, they're the ones who have us on this, have this program going. Saying that to say, any information, a brother, that you need to share with Black Belt Wall Street, we like to see people join you guys. Or you join us, but collectively, we need to come together. And I would ask Paul to communicate through Ali. That way, she can get that information and keep it and share it through our networks of Black Belt Wall Street. So, Sister Ali, I would ask you to take charge on being our information specialist from here on in.
Most certainly, I will continue to do that. You know, this has been a phenomenal start to more and more information. You know, the goal is to bring on more experts such as Brother Artist and those that he's working with directly to bring in more information to tell us more. So that is my goal, and I'm excited to do that in the next for next Wednesday and into the new year. Before we close out, I know we have about 20 minutes left or so, and I want to start off just giving the audience Mr. Artist's information in case, you know, he has to jump off early or such. I know he was saying that he has a busy day tomorrow. So first I want to give him his email address. For those of you who have questions, if you are interested in doing business, if you just want to introduce yourself to Brother Artist to see where you can go from there, his email address is Crafton, which is spelled Crascon, Crafton at S, the letter S, dash, the letter E, dash, capital.com. Again, the email address is Crafton at S, dash, e-capital.com. If you are a person who wants to be more direct and you want to text him or send him a voicemail message, his phone number on WhatsApp is 773-206-3047. Again, his number is 773-206-3047. That's his phone number. Brother Bilal, he said that his phone dropped and he had to be unmuted again. He just got back on. Could you find a way to unmute him, please?
Yes, but let me just say, Sister Ali, it's very important as our networking group. We have business plans that we want to put together. Therefore, it's very important that at this point we share a lot of information with each other. So I would say that our listeners come through the New Africa Business Association. And, of course, that's the newafricabusinessassociation.com. You can go online or you can send us an email. And that would be at nabassc@gmail.com. nabassc@gmail.com. You can call us 202-288-5660 or 202-903-7278, 301-234-9090. But we heard this information. We will continue to hear this information. And like I said, we look forward to being associated with each other's organization. But right now, we need to put together and talk about a business plan of returning to Africa or wherever, if that's our desire. But it's a business plan that we need to put together. And again, I ask you to be in touch with New Africa Business Association. And again, Sister Ali. Let me just find out, Sister Ali, where we can find it, what it is when he went off. When he went offline, our lines are booked up to its fullest. So it may be pretty hard to bring him back on because we're at our max, and when he went off, it took him off our limit. So I think he can only hear us from this point. But it would be rather difficult because our lines are filled up to the max. And I think there are others who are trying to come on, but they can only stay on and listen to us through the internet because we can only have 500 callers. And we have over 500 callers on the line right now. So
okay, so he said he's on. He said he's on. If he's on, then
because I have all the mics open that I can open. I know all the mics that we can open, but there are many that are trying to call in that can't get in because I can't open the mics to them. But
okay, can you hear me?
Us, are you on, Mr. Artist?
Excellent. We got
him.
Yeah,
can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Oh,
we're
you're on.
You.
Okay,
yes,
you got on. Okay, he's back.
Okay,
I'm on.
Well,
okay, good.
I'll turn it back over to you, Sister Ali, and you continue from here.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, I'm glad we got you back on. But yes, the energy is very positive right now. Very excited about the next steps and what to do. I just shared your information, and of course, I'll share it again before the show was over. So just give us an understanding, Brother Artist, at this point, if someone were to contact you and want to move forward with the potential of doing business in Senegal and other parts of West Africa, what are you looking for as a broker? What are some of the things that should be mentioned in their inquiry?
Yeah, good question. So first let me say, you know, I'm starting here, but I'm looking to help broker opportunities internationally, all over the world. So one, it'll help if you can come to me to say, hey, this is what I do, this is what I've experienced in doing, and this is what I specifically want to do overseas. Now, again, like I said, you can kind of approach it if you're more of a, someone who likes to do business in different areas to say, hey, what are the opportunities? that's a much broader conversation, and that's a more long-term conversation where I have to, you know, kind of go do some research and bring some things back to you. But if you can say specifically, I want to do this, I want to sell this, that's helpful. Then I can let you know what opportunities there are immediately that I know of. And if that's, if there aren't any that I know of immediately, or there's not quite a perfect fit and I need to go, you know, do a little bit of research, I can go do that. But the next step would be for us to develop what's called a capability statement. That's where I put together a document that has my company's name and logo and information, and essentially talks about how my company will be partnering with your company to deliver the products and services. So, for example, if you are in cybersecurity, you have a cybersecurity company, then we would draft a capability statement that says, you know, SC Capital is partnering with ABC Cybersecurity to provide cybersecurity services. We provide penetration testing and risk assessments and compliance training, and we provide them for these kinds of entities. And then I can take that document and talk to those connections that I have in other countries. I can talk to my partners at Black and Global Business Network, and we can go find those opportunities. And then once we find those, then it's a matter of communicating to those government entities or private entities, this is what we do, and try to understand what pricing would look like, and then, of course, we'd enter the negotiation phase. So those would be kind of those initial steps. But the more specific you can be about what you want to do, the faster things can move. And, again, if you are kind of more general, kind of open, either within an industry or across different industries, it's not that we can't work together, but it's just going to take probably a bit more research to find that right fit. But I'm telling you, the opportunities are out there. Even if I have to refer you to someone else in my network and we can't work together or work together on a limited basis, that's fine. But the opportunities are definitely out there. And I enjoy finding them and connecting people to them, whether, you know, you end up working through me and I get paid for it or not. I just enjoy doing that. So that's what I'd say, be prepared to do.
That is wonderful. But now, brother, I do have a concern or a question as far as importing. I have some friends there and who are they live in the Gambia, and they're interested in importing fruits and vegetables. Now, I'm in terms of perishables and things of this nature. And, you know, this we may have to do, like you said, some more research on it. But at least this could be a start, because we all need fruits, we all need vegetables, and we need them organically grown, wherein they're not all, in other words, natural grown fruits and vegetables as well. Now, how feasible is that for import, do you think, at this time, or should we just do some more research?
So are you talking about buying, having fruits and vegetables from the Gambia brought here, or are you sending it from the U.S.?
Right here to the U.S.,
to the Gambia. Into the U.S., okay. So that's just a matter of, you know, we investigate the supply chain, right? So that's a matter of creating a relationship with the farmer there, understanding either their ability to export or you figuring out that value chain, which may look like you figuring out, finding those farmers, buying, purchasing from them, and then figuring out how they ship it to, you know, get it to the coast, where it can be warehoused, you know, if we're freezing them, figuring out cold storage, then figuring out how we ship it here, what port we're going to receive it in, how it's going to get transported to wherever you need it to get to once it gets off the ship here in the U.S. or there in the U.S. It's more about researching that supply chain and seeing what are the links and connections within it. Now, I know one of the things that I'm going to start really digging into and raising my IQ around is just that supply chain management, because I've got a consultant that's going to be working for me. She's knee-deep into the agriculture world, and what I'm going to be asking her to do is pull together a group of black farmers in the U.S. that would like to ship overseas. And so to support them, I'm going to need to, and I've already engaged a supply chain management expert, but learning more about that. But as I learn about how to ship from the U.S. over here, I'm, you know, the return trip is the same process. So, so I will definitely say over this next 6 months to a year, I'm definitely going to be, I'm becoming much more knowledgeable about supply chain management as it relates to import export, and that's just going to, you know, kind of, I'll be able to extend that knowledge to others. So by the time you find out who those farmers are, you'll probably be ready to roll with trying to bring it over, and we'll be able to price that out. I will say this, though. One thing that I found out through the Black and Global Network is the U.S. government, because they're invested in helping U.S. companies work overseas, the Import-Export Bank, or EXIM Bank, will actually pay other countries to buy our products. So, for example, if you produce the mangoes or the oranges or the sweet potatoes, and Japan, let's say, wanted to buy them, the U.S. government would pay Japan for the product so that they can then pay you for the product. So your purchase is guaranteed, right, which, of course, takes much of the risk off the table for you as the producer. But that's just a matter of creating a relationship with the U.S. Department of Commerce and maximizing on those opportunities and those benefits. So there are some benefits and opportunities around import export just within working through the United States government that are there. But like I said, you've got producers over here that are producing products that are going bad. Like I said, the tomatoes and the onions are going bad here in this country because they can't process them and get them out in time. So it's definitely worth researching.
Right. And to add to what you're saying about that, Mr. Artis, what I do know also is you give the example of Japan, but that's exactly what's happening right now. And it's why the momentum right now of doing business in Africa is so prolific, and it's an excellent time for Black businesses. And the network that you have of people who know which African countries are receiving grants and loans and financing from the United States for these type of businesses, because the U.S. has a geopolitical agenda, and that is to get U.S.-based companies in Africa by any means possible. And they understand that by supporting Black businesses, we will be the best business, actually, to connect in Africa. The U.S. government is not naive or stupid to the history of this country and our connection to our people. So supporting Black businesses in that way by providing African countries these financial resources, therefore they could we can have guaranteed business, is what's happening right now. And these are what some of the businesses that are happening that Mr. Artis and others in his network are connected to.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, mics are open. If there is any question, we welcome your question. All right, brothers and sisters, we have about, I would say, about five more minutes. At this point, we usually still start talking in general about our topic this evening. And, of course, this has been, like I said, the beginning of something I think that is very historic, because I don't know of any time as to where it would, has been invited as to where African Americans can have dual citizenship back in our homes that was taken away from us. But if this is true, then like I said, here in America, our middle class cannot live. Our middle class, as we speak, are being evicted, and many of them are cannot afford to really live in this country. And our Black communities are totally undeveloped, and because a redlining business and business production is just something that Ukraine and other countries can get but African Americans, when it comes to dollar bills floating in our communities, they're only being taken out of our communities with no return. So again, if we can acquire land, because that's what the African American needs, is land. As far as the development of the land, who can develop land better than African Americans? We can do our own water sources. We can do our own power and build our own power grid. We can build our own automobiles. We build them here. Whatever we do here, we can do in our own sovereignty. So again, we're talking about putting together business plans if we're interested in such a move as to where we can build our own communities. By building our communities, it's going to not only advance the African American, but it's also going to advance the Africans. We're not going there to explore these peoples. We're going there to become, hopefully, a partnership with these peoples. But what we need to know before we make our investments is that can we become partners? So this is what we're talking about, putting together our business plans, talking about business plans, and of course, Brother Artist, Brother Samson, I know Brother Seth, the ambassador. I know his father very well. So again, I look forward to working. These brothers are serious. It's been ever since Imam W.D. Muhammad. That's who we're coming from. That's who taught us. And now we're talking about being very proactive on what we have been. So again, if we can go to Africa, and Africa is indeed our home, our monies can go a long ways in Africa. And the same as we built this country, we can build Africa. So brothers and sisters, Brother Artist, we ask that we continue. The Business Association and this radio station is a channel of communications for us. Let's use this channel of communication and see if we can all go forward. So, brothers and sisters, until next Wednesday at this time, I would say good evening.
If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you had your white teacher?
Who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming for you and for me. With just a little bit more education and love for our nation, we'll make a better society.
And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brother?